easy. We make it easy.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. I know it's raining out there, but it is still a beautiful day. Thanks for spending part of it with us. We got a full lineup for you today. Coming up at 10:45 this morning, we talk with New Orleans jazz legend Alan Toussaint. He's going to be coming here to Vermont next week, performing up in the St. Johnsbury area. We'll also check in with our White House crew in hour number two. Later this hour, we'll talk with Republican gubernatorial candidate Scott Milne. We're going to talk about a proposal that he unveiled yesterday dealing with education funding. We'll talk about the campaign as well. Love to hear from you throughout the program. You can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Bringing it right down to business this morning, we've got a really interesting topic, somewhat controversial. And again, we would welcome your calls. And let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Alex Halkin. She is one of the co-directors, along with Deb Ellis, of a movie called End of Love, where they talk about the issue of adolescence, online pornography, and the connection there. And they're kind enough to both join us here in our studios this morning. Alex, good morning. I'm going to start with you. How's it going?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having us.
So what interested you about even exploring this issue of what happens to younger adults, male adults, when they get convicted in connection with child pornography?
Well, this is, you know, obviously connected to having access to the internet and high-speed internet, broadband internet. And what's been happening over the last 10-plus years is that younger and younger males are accessing online hardcore pornography at earlier and earlier ages. Right now, the average age is 10 years old.
Wow. And this is pretty hardcore stuff.
Yes, this is hardcore. There isn't really softcore on the internet, so to speak, anymore.
I mean, when I was 10, I found a stack of Playboys at a house where I was babysitting, and that was like, you know, a gold mine. What are we actually talking about here? I mean, this is really almost like violent.
Yeah, what it is most, not all, a lot of it is very misogynistic. It is usually sex acts that women don't voluntarily do. Most women in pornography don't last very long because physically it's very hard on their bodies. So for 10-year-olds who are just starting into adolescence to be exposed to this imagery, this notion of sexuality, it affects their brain circuitry and their development of their prefrontal cortex. So, we're talking about something that is very significant in their sexual development.
So you're in this movie looking at what, though, in connection with that? What happens to those kids? Tell me that.
Yeah, so what happens is usually, you know, the subjects that we're looking at, they start looking at porn at a very early age, some even younger than 10, 7 years old, let's say, introduced through a parent or family member or a friend. And, you know, in normal adolescent development, the tendency is to look at more extreme imagery, regardless of if it's sexual. So what ends up happening is these young males look at pornography for the sexual nature of it, but also look at it because it's extremely violent. It's just extreme. And so they end up kind of falling down a rabbit hole, we call it, into looking at child pornography, intentionally or not intentionally. I mean, if you're a 15-year-old and you're looking at another 15-year-old, well, you're looking at your peer. Mm-hmm. But that's considered child pornography.
Mm-hmm. Deb, talk to me about what your motivation was and wanted to look at this issue.
I became interested in how young people respond to pornography because I raised a son in my house. And I think I started thinking about what happens, how does behavior change, what's going on when you have a young male in your house who is probably behaving very normally. But so that started my interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as we've gone along, I mean, I think... I don't want to say that it's okay or anything, but it is relatively normal that kids are experiencing pornography as they're growing up today.
How easy is it for kids to access this stuff?
If you turn on your computer and you make a few clicks, it's very, very easy to access pornography. And again, sometimes it happens intentionally. Sometimes it happens unintentionally. But I think that you can assume that any child who is carrying around a handheld device by him or herself in their bedroom, in the car, in the backseat of the car, has access to the material that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's part of our culture. It's part of the normal culture that these young people are growing up with.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking at, I know one of the things that you're looking at are the consequences of these young males getting arrested with this. Why is that an issue that's important to look at?
The lens that we sort of are using right now to look at the issue of how pornography works in our culture is to look at young males who have been convicted of child pornography possession, young males between the age of approximately 18 and 24, because we think these young men represent what happens, what the consequences of actually having that material on your computer are. Oftentimes they don't know that it's illegal. They might actually know that it's wrong,
mm-hmm.
but it's still there. And the fact of the matter is that law enforcement can track that the trafficking of those images very, very easily. Most known images that are being exchanged online have hashtags on them, which are little identifiers. So law enforcement can find, can track when and where an image goes, and they can track the IP address, and they can come to you. So the issue is you have, say, a 16, 17-year-old young male who has some of these images on their computer. Law enforcement is tracking them. Sometimes, instead of going in and intervening and maybe saying what's going on, they'll wait until that young man is 18 and will then go in and arrest him.
Mm-hmm.
And charge him for child pornography possession. Once you're charged with child pornography possession, your life is destroyed.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about that too, Alex?
Yeah. If you're arrested for child pornography possession, pretty much for certain, you're going to be taking a plea deal. Most of these images that these young guys get are on BitTorrent sites, right? So they do bulk downloads onto either their computer or hard drive. So they have multiple images. And there are mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines if you're prosecuted federally. And so what happens is, depending on the number of images you have, depends on how many years you're going to get. So it's very unlikely that you're going to get anything less than 5 years in a federal penitentiary if you're prosecuted federally. If you're prosecuted by the state, there's a lot more leeway. But the worst thing that happens is you're put on the sex offender registry, and usually it's for life. They say that you're put on for a certain amount of time, but it's very difficult to get off the sex offender registry once you're on it. Your image, your address, all your information is available online once you're out of prison. You usually get very restrictive probation once you're out of prison. Basically, you know, what happens is that with the registry, you're very restricted on where you can live, where you can get a job, because you have a felony conviction. And you're in deep trouble. And if you're a young male who maybe hasn't even lived outside of his parents' home,
mm-hmm.
when he's busted, that means that he is extremely curtailed in his ability to mature and become a, you know, an autonomous adult. Many of these guys end up staying with their parents. Their parents, you know, search for a place where they can live, you know, that isn't 1,500 feet from a bus stop, a park, a school, a library, whatever. It's very restrictive.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with filmmakers Alex Halkin and also Deb Ellis. We're talking about their documentary End of Love, which talks about online pornography, in particular in connection with adolescent males. If you have any comments or questions, you can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. So where's the problem here? Is it how we deal with people that download this? Is it the accessibility of it? I mean, where's the problem? I mean, where's the sort of the pressure point here?
I think, well, we think the problem is that we live in a completely sexualized society that doesn't want to talk about sex. So if you're getting your sex education from online hardcore pornography at 10 years old, you're in big trouble. And so it's kind of like the lack of real information, real sex education, the inability of our culture to really deal with this issue, and parents being unaware of what their teenage sons are doing. I mean, one thing that we say to every parent we meet is like, there is no private internet time for your child. You need to put the computer in the middle of the living room and make sure you know exactly what they're doing. I mean, obviously, if you're giving them handheld devices that have internet access, well, then you kind of, you know, you're in big trouble. But it's because it is so pervasive, because it is considered the norm, these guys are going to look at it. You know, you just need to know what they're doing.
And if you get a 10-year-old boy looking at that hardcore stuff, how are they going to treat women when they get older?
Right. And that's a huge issue. And we're definitely seeing it in university students, you know.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a researcher that we've worked with for a number of years who has looked at what's going on with college students and their sexuality, and she said that she's talked to young women who now, when they want a real intimate relationship, they have it with other women, that they can't really have it with young males. And if you grow up with a sexuality that's defined by pornography, it's very misogynist, it's very violent, you know, and it's very difficult to develop social skills.
Mm-hmm.
And how to communicate with women, especially on an intimate level.
Let me take a phone call here. Let me have you put those on here, Deb. Let's go to Hardwick. Jason, good morning. How's it going?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I would just like to ask, does the lady on, does she have any ideas as far as the way she would like it dealt with? I mean, should they just not be prosecuted when they look on these sites when they turn 18? Is that her idea? Should they go to counseling or something?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, what we feel, since law enforcement is tracking these men, these young boys, they know what they're doing. And one thing that would be extremely helpful would be to have an intervention, right? Not come and bust these guys and put them in prison, but to have some kind of therapy available for these young males so that they can work through these issues. Because this isn't, we don't feel it's a law enforcement issue. We really feel that it is a rehabilitation issue.
Thanks for your call, Jason. I mean, you're talking about younger adolescents, 18 to 24. Is there a difference that's involved with that age group than, you know, 40 to 60-year-old men?
The prefrontal cortex in males is not fully developed until typically age 25 or so. So we're still really dealing with young men who do not have fully developed judgment. And they also are their brains are still malleable. So you can still work and still think about how can we rewire what has been impacted at that point. So, yeah.
There's a bit of an element, it seems to me, of putting the genie back in the bottle here. I mean, it sounds like this stuff's just everywhere and that you can't possibly clean it up, right?
Well, law enforcement knows where a lot of it is. And we, you know, one question that we have is why the internet service providers don't block it more. You know, we know that places like Google and different search engines have their own people that go and search for this stuff, right? And try and erase it.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, if law enforcement has tags on stuff, they know where it is, and they're allowing it to be there.
How many males, how many adolescents, young adults are we talking about on a yearly basis get busted for this?
It's very hard to get the numbers in terms of the age group, but right now there's close to 800,000 people on the sex offender registry in general. And that's for a number of different kinds of offenses and even non-sexual offenses. You can be put on the sex offender registry for doing things that have nothing to do with sex.
Okay.
I would also just add to that prosecution of child pornography possession cases has doubled every year for the last 10 years.
What stage is your movie at? When's it going to be shown? When can people see it and learn more about this?
Right now, we are in... We're still in pre-production, but we're getting ready to start shooting. We have three main characters defined, and we're also on our website, which is endoflovefilm.com. We're also doing a little fundraising, so if there's any listeners out there that are interested in the subject matter and want to see us finish this film, any donations, any size, are greatly appreciated.
Talk to me about the three characters that you're focusing on.
Okay, we have Guy, who is, he's on the sex offender registry. He was somebody who was addicted to pornography in general and was downloading all kinds of pornography. I mean, usually that's what happens with a lot of these guys when they get busted. It's not like it's just child porn. It's the gamut of porn. Because when you go to these BitTorrent sites, these files are identified, it has all different kinds of names, so you don't know what you're downloading. So anyway, he had child pornography on his computer, and his girlfriend found it and reported him to the police. He was in college at the time, studying, I think it was, sociology. And when he was busted, he didn't ever do any jail time. It was a state case. Didn't go federal. And he was put on probation, and he went to law school and got a law degree. And when he went to sit for the bar, the Kentucky Bar Association wouldn't let him.
Wow.
Because he was on the sex offender registry. And he filed a suit with a law firm, and it was still rejected. And so now he does work in a law firm. Obviously, he's not a lawyer because he couldn't sit for the bar. And he is also now challenging, I don't know if the case has been filed yet, the state of Kentucky around the control of social media.
Mm-hmm.
Because sex offender, I mean, depends on what state you're in, but almost everyone that we've talked to, what happens is their access to the internet becomes severely limited. Some cannot access the internet at all, and none of them can use social media, like
wow.
Facebook and things like that.
Wow. All right. Tell me about another one of the characters.
We have another character who is a mom whose son was busted for child pornography possession. And she now is the president of a national organization that deals with families of registrants, is what they call people on the sex offender registry.
And the organization is called WAR,
yeah.
Women Against the Registry.
So you mentioned you had a teenage son. How did you talk to him about this stuff? Or did you?
I didn't know how to talk to him about this stuff at that time. So in a sense, I'm looking at this with hindsight, and I'm thinking about what I would have done.
Okay.
So no, I didn't have any more answers than any other parent.
All right. Well, now that you have 20/20 hindsight and have the value of all this work that you've done, what would you have talked to him about? I mean, how should somebody talk to their 15-16-year-old son about this stuff?
I think that
the scare, you know, that you scare the hell out of them routine.
Yeah, just say no works. Doesn't work, yeah. Or turning it off doesn't work, or thinking that they are going to act rationally and tell them that everybody knows. You know, what my comment used to always be is, you know, when you go places on the internet, other people know. That doesn't work. That's trying to rationalize with a teenager. In hindsight, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that we work with has a really great way of describing it, and what she says is that no young male wants to have his sexuality defined by somebody else. And so one way to talk to young men is to say, you know, if this is where you're going, what you're doing is you're really letting somebody else control you. You're really letting somebody else control how your sexuality is being developed. So you actually don't say no to sex. You know, you actually say, this is your job right now, and take ownership of it.
Huh. All right. That's a different approach. Let's go to Plainfield. Hi, Michelle. Good morning.
Hi. This is Michelle from Plainfield. First, I wanted you to say again, because I'd really like to give some money to your film. How do you find you on the web?
Our website address is endoflovefilm.com.
That's one word, endoflovefilm?
Yes, .com.
Because I put in the endoflove.com and I got some other thing.
Yeah, there's some other movie.
Some weird blog. Anyway, endoflovefilm, good. And the other thing is, I don't have sons, I have only daughters, I raised only daughters, but it just breaks my heart to hear this because I was involved, and I'm, you know, I work with women who have been sexually abused. And was involved in the 80s with sort of that coming out, how prevalent the sexual abuse of girls is, particularly in the family. But this is such a perversion of what we were trying to do, this kind of victimless crime, you know, putting someone in jail for looking at pictures. It's such a perversion of what real sexual abuse is.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a whole theory about, if you start here, you'll end up doing it, but that isn't true at all. And it's just, I don't know, it's just heartbreaking to me, and I'm glad you're bringing it up and making the film, and I feel so sad for these families. Anyway, I'll give you some money.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
So will you address this question? Is there a connection between people that look at this stuff as adolescents who then act on it and commit violent acts?
Well, that's a question. Nobody really knows that because it's kind of a new phenomena. You can't really looking at child pornography is totally illegal. So you can't do any kind of research around exposing, you know, 13-year-olds to this.
Right.
And so nobody really knows. I mean, what we say is that we're in the middle of a vast, uncontrolled social experiment, and we have no idea what the outcome is. We know that there's youth being victimized on both sides of the screen, and that the people that produce this material really aren't the ones that are gone after. It's, you know, I mean, these guys that download and have it on, you know, on their computer, this is the low-hanging fruit. These guys are totally compliant. Most of these males are white, middle class. Most of the, even in the adult male population who gets busted for this, it's white, middle class. And so this is, these guys are totally compliant. When the police come, they just give it all up.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Boy, I thought the word she used that really rang true for me was sad. I mean, it's just sad.
Yeah, it's tragic, you know. I mean, when you consider the number of young males that are getting prosecuted for this crime and being put on the sex offender registry and knowing that basically their life is pretty much over or going to be severely restricted, it's incredibly sad.
Yeah, but I'm talking more about that. Just this is how they're learning what intimacy means. I mean, that's just sad. Really sad. Is there any, I've got to let you guys run here. Is there anything you want to add that I haven't asked you about, Deb? You're waving at me. Were you just waving? Were you just waving to say hi?
I was just waving. I think that the final note is, you know, go check out our website for more information, endoflovefilm.com.
So when do you think this is actually going to be seenable?
Our goal is to finish the film by 2016.
Okay. All right.
So there's... It takes a little while.
Yeah, those documentary films have a way of happening.
And also, just to let people know here in Vermont, since this is where we're based, there's a good chance that we may be doing some, you know, rough cut screenings, you know, public venue screenings where we can get feedback as we go through the production and editing process. So just check our website out and you'll be able to get that information.
Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. Alex Halkin and Deb Ellis, their movie is End of Love. You can find them on the web at endoflovefilm.com. We'll take a short break. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Republican gubernatorial candidate Scott Milne. We'll be back after this.
The merchants of downtown Montpelier invite you to join them for Montpelier's annual Moonlight Madness sale this Thursday evening from 6 to 9. Many stores will join the madness until 9 o'clock with some absolutely fantastic sales.
Join the madness at Woodbury Mountain Toys, where you'll find an incredible selection of puzzles, games, Legos, infant toys, Playmobil, science projects, and more. For 3 days, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, everything is 20% off. Jump down the rabbit hole and save 20% store-wide all day, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at the Cheshire Cat. Find a wonderland of playful art and craft, original clothing designed for women and plus women, colorful shoes.